Science and chemistry are all around us all the time, obviously, and it may seem abstract, but when we talk about science, we're talking about science literacy. Do you think about, and when we think about literacy, we think about, well, being able to read and write, and that's certainly important kind of literacy, but it's, I think it's important to, in order to be successful in everyday life, obviously. What about science literacy? Our guest today would say that both as individuals and as parts of a community and society, it's just as important to understand the basics of science as it is to know our ABCs. And we're lucky to have a couple of people with us today who are passionate not only about science, but increasing the level of science literacy in our society. One of them, UW-Madison chemistry professor Bassam Shakashiri, is not only a respected scientist, but he's committed to showing children and adults alike how amazing science can be. And Bassam, always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Very happy to be here, Larry. Your introductory remarks are right on the mark here. We live in a society that is very advanced and dependent on advances in science and technology, and it's really the appreciation of science that we would like people in our communities to learn about and to enjoy and to make contributions to them. And we're very, very happy to be with you today.
Jerry Bell is with us as well, former division director at the National Science Foundation, works with Bassam on the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. And Jerry, thank you for spending time with us today as well.
Oh, thank you, Larry. That was very nice. Yes, I've been involved with Bassam for about 40 years, a little over 40 years. So working with the WISL, with the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, really has been a pleasure.
Well, it's always a pleasure to work with Bassam. Both of you guys have worked for many years on science literacy. How does improving science literacy help us as a society to meet all these challenges that we've got? I mean, and we're going to zero in a bit on climate change here, but what about that, Bassam?
Science and technology are the engines that drive our economy, and it's developing a sense of appreciation of what science can do, what technology can do, what the limitations are of science and technology. Very, very important. We live in the most advanced society in the history of humankind. Mm-hmm. And we are privileged in that sense, all due to the advances in science and technology, whether it's in healthcare, in communication, in exploration. Science is a human endeavor. It's an adventure of the mind, Larry. It's a fascinating adventure. It comes with great challenges, with great joy. Kids of all ages ask questions. Why is the sky blue? Well, not on a day like today, but yeah. Why is it that in the springtime, which I hope is around the corner, the plants and the flowers burst? Mm-hmm. Why is it that the leaves change colors in the fall? We're full of questions. We're curious as human species. And
Northern Wisconsin, now they're saying, why is it snowing in April? Because it is.
That's a question for the weather guys to answer, right? They'll be here later on this month, right? Yes, changes in climate, changes in weather, changes in our health conditions. Longevity now is a great result of advances in the medical sciences, in nutrition, in you name it, and it's all related to advances in science and in technology. And that's why we want to have outstanding offerings in our school systems, offerings that the teachers can joyfully and respectfully share with their students and with the parents and families of their students. So we're very, very committed to enhancing the quality of science education at all levels for kids of all ages through classroom activities and through informal science education activities outside the classroom by visiting parks, botanical gardens, zoos, by enjoying the great outdoors that we have in our community here, and also becoming aware of our responsibilities to protect the outdoors and to think about the various consequences of the Industrial Revolution.
You know, the White House recently announced a climate data initiative, and speaking of, you know, you're I think kind of in a way referencing that. What's that initiative all about? What are they proposing, Jerry?
They're proposing to make the data that are being that are gathered by organizations like NOAA, the National Oceanic Administration, and NASA available, so that governments, individuals can get the data, and what we hope is act on it in terms of preserving this wonderful world we live in, that Bassam has described so eloquently.
Yeah, and this obviously fits right into, I think, his climate action plan, the president's climate action plan.
This is a very important illustration of the leadership role that those of us in the science community, those of us in the most advanced society in humankind, led by the president and by our elected officials, can do. We have an awesome responsibility, not only to ourselves, but to the generations that come after us. And climate change is upon us, Larry. Climate change is unequivocal. Global warming is unequivocal. I know there are perhaps some people in the listening audience that would like to discuss this and other aspects of it. We're here to engage in fruitful, productive conversations about this. But the president's action is to be saluted. This is the kind of leadership that we need, not only in our country, but worldwide, because the stakes are very high in terms of protecting our planet and advancing the human condition all around the planet. And climate change is a very significant, daunting challenge that we have. It's one of about half a dozen daunting challenges that we have to deal with, including having finite resources, population growth, malnutrition. But the focus of President Obama's initiative now is to deal with what we can do collectively in a responsible way, in ways that are useful for our economy, ways that are useful for our well-being in the United States, especially in the United States, that relate to the consequences of changes in the climate due to the excessive usage that we have and dependence on fossil fuels. Yeah. Fossil fuels are not going to go away. We're going to be using them, but there are ways to mitigate and to adapt, and we can talk about what some of the issues are that we can do, what responsibilities we have individually and collectively.
I haven't given the phone number yet, so I should have done that a long time ago. So let me do it right now. If you have a question or comment or want to chime in as we talk about science literacy and climate change, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I know during the rollout of this plan, Michael Boots, who is acting chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality, said that climate change and preparing for its impacts, probably one of the greatest challenges that we face here in this nation.
Absolutely. The stakes are high in terms of life on Earth. And I think there's been a fair amount of fear in the world based on the impending changes and the changes that have already taken place. And I think one of the things that we need to emphasize in the kind of conversation we're having today is what an individual can do as an individual. Collectively, of course, we need to work as well, but individuals have a role to play.
Mm-hmm.
People think that what I do doesn't make any difference. I'm just one person. That's not true. And maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the things that an individual could do.
Oh, absolutely. I hope we have and we will have a chance to do that. I want to give Denise and Madison a chance to join us. Denise, hello. Hi. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
And what do you have for us?
Yeah, so I think this is a fascinating subject. This reminds me of something that, unfortunately, I don't remember the name of the guy. It was a prominent mathematician who was arguing that we need to, in terms of math education, we need to make sure that that people are getting statistics. In fact, he said that we should have statistics be sort of the capstone mathematical, you know, what we teach in high school, as opposed to calculus, because everybody needs statistics to get math, to understand science. Like, if you don't understand statistics, you don't understand what that means when someone says, oh, that's not statistically significant. I feel like there's a lot of people out there that don't have any idea how to interpret statistics, and I think that really affects science literacy. Most people would never use calculus, you know, unless they were going to physics or something. But I think everybody would get something out of statistics, and I think that would go a long way towards helping science literacy.
Hmm. You make very good points, Denise. Thank you for bringing those up. And when we talk about science literacy, we include in that mathematical literacy, we include statistical literacy. Yes, you're right that people should have a good understanding. And I want to emphasize what I just said. People should have a good understanding and be well-versed in the use of statistics. Look, Denise, after all, people follow baseball players and they follow their batting averages. Mm-hmm. That's relatively easy to do. Understanding the statistical nature of the occurrence of certain events, the probability of an earthquake, for example, is important, and the basis for making those predictions is also important. So mathematical literacy, scientific literacy is essential to what we have to do.
Yeah, I thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it very much, Denise. You can join in, too. That number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, Talking Science, Literacy, and Climate Change as well, with our two guests, Bassam Shakashiri, Professor of Chemistry at the UW-Madison, past President of the American Chemical Society as well, and Jerry Bell is former Division Director at the National Science Foundation, Faculty Associate for the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. Science and chemistry all around us all the time, and it may seem abstract, but when we talk about the very serious challenges that we're facing in climate change, it becomes a lot more immediate and concrete. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Science is an endlessly fascinating topic, and we're lucky to have Bassam Shakashiri with us to talk about the opportunities and the challenges in the world of science, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, past president of the American Chemical Society. And Bassam, thanks again for coming by. Appreciate it very much.
Happy to be here, Larry.
With us today as well, Jerry Bell. Jerry's the former division director at the National Science Foundation, and he was the director of the Climate Science Initiative for that organization, and works with Bassam on the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. And Jerry, great to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. We have callers online. I want to go back to that statistics. We were talking about math just a touch before our news break, and our caller said, you know, we ought to be more concerned about statistics. And you might agree with that, Jerry.
I do. I think that Denise was right on, and my daughter would also agree. She is a new faculty member at a community college and right this minute is teaching statistics and thinks it's the greatest thing.
Well, actually, I think I had 5 statistics classes throughout my career, and I actually enjoyed statistics. I thought it was a lot of fun. Rich in Oshkosh has a comment. Rich, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. This is a really great show. I just had a question about this is something with the Russian Olympics, and where when we had the warm weather, unusually warm weather in Russia, Siberia, on that side of the world, where usually it's just the opposite. Is it possible that we had a huge push of warm climate since our global weather is so fluid? Is it just possible that it pushed the warm air so far over the North Pole that it just pushed it over here, and we were the unlucky ones, where a guy up in the UP said that he had 74 days of below zero weather? Is that just a luck of the draw?
It's hard to say, Jerry.
It's not. It's not a. In part, it's a luck of the draw. In part, that's a natural phenomenon. Things change like that. But in this particular case, there is some evidence. We won't say it's absolute, but there's some evidence that the warming of the North Pole and then the change in the jet stream that takes place because of that causes the jet stream to come lower toward the equator and to move east from the west much more slowly than it usually does. So that the kinds of weather that you got lasted a lot longer than they might otherwise. And that same phenomenon could have taken place on the other side of the world and brought warmer air up from the equator, or from the equator into the Black Sea and the region around Sochi, where the Olympics were.
Mm, very interesting. Thank you, Rich, for calling. Al in Land O'Lakes, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for the show. It's very informative, and I wanted to ask Sam, I'm a big fan, if he was aware of pet coke and how the U.S. exports global warming to the whole world. We're the worst polluter in the world now. We won't burn it, but we'll export it, you know, and it's tuned into what they want to do with the Keystone Pipeline. America refines, you know, primarily in the Midwest, and they processed 1.65 million barrels a day of this in 2012. It's denser and dirtier than anything that comes out of a mine. It can be burned just like coal to produce power, but pet coke emits up to 15% more climate pollutants. It also contains 12 times as much sulfur.
Oh. Are you familiar with pet coke? Is it petroleum coke? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the kind of the leftovers. Not only do we export pet coke and other, and we also are exporting, become a large exporter of coal. And as the natural gas boom takes place, we're moving toward being an exporter of natural gas as well. So we are indeed America exporting some of the fuels which add to the climate change. Add to the fossil fuel problem.
Yeah. So that's another one to consider. Joe in Harper's Ferry, Iowa, how about you? What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm curious. You know, due to the propensity for humans to try to maximize what they have available in the time frame they're living in, has technology reached a point of diminishing returns where we're so enamored with what it creates that we're missing the basics behind it and how we can use it to perpetuate our civilization and the planet?
That's a good observation and something for all of us to think about, to make sure that we use technology properly for our own good, for the good of other inhabitants of the planet, and for the well-being of the planet. When a certain advance is made, when a certain invention is made, then it behooves us to be responsible in how we use that invention. When the gun has been invented, you can't disinvent it.
Mm-hmm.
But we can make choices about using a gun or not using a gun. I use that as an illustration to address the question that's being raised here in terms of how we have to be careful, deliberate, thoughtful, in terms of using properly and safely the different technologies that are developed as a result of the very highly successful research activities and the adventures of the human mind in producing these products and putting them to good use. and to safe use, and to also put them to use in such ways that do not contribute to pollution, that protect the environment, that help us enjoy the quality of life that we have in our society, not only in the United States, but hopefully elsewhere around the world.
Yeah. Joe, thanks. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you that way as well. But Sam, you were going to add something here.
I was just going to say something about the huge success that we enjoy now as a result of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
It has greatly helped us all over the world. But along with the with that, we also have to be aware of the fact that we are putting into the atmosphere more greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide. The concentration of these greenhouse gases, for example, carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, and so on, are increasing. And they're increasing because of human activity. The well-known greenhouse effect caused by these gases traps solar energy, and thus warming the Earth's atmosphere and also the land and the oceans. And it's causing the melting of ice caps and for those of us who enjoy the outdoors and like to travel to national parks, for example, going to Glacier Park, if this global warming continues, Larry, perhaps in the next 40, 50 some years, when we go to Glacier Park, we will not be seeing any.
No glacier.
There are no glaciers there. So this is something that we have to be aware of and be responsible in how we act individually as well as collectively. As Jerry said, individuals can make a difference in terms of what we do. We can use, for example, more energy-efficient devices. Whether it's the light bulb or something else that we have at home, we can drive less than we did before. We can use more public transportation. There's a whole slew of these behavioral issues that we should become aware of and think about seriously, so that we are truly using the knowledge and from the discoveries that we make in science and the developments we make in technology, so we are protecting the planet and the inhabitants of the planet.
Yeah, those are excellent points. I was just thinking, as you were talking about that, and Jerry, I know you want to add something too. Somebody told me once that, you know, the average lawn, the lawnmower, you mow your lawn in Madison, Wisconsin, it's about the equivalent of driving your car to Chicago with the amount of pollution.
That's because those little two-cycle engines those don't have much efficiency.
Yeah, they don't. They're not very efficient.
Right. No, but interestingly, we talk about the glaciers melting, and that, you know, okay, there aren't too many glaciers around here. On the other hand, there is a lake around here, Lake Mendota, which has, in the last 150 years, lost 1 month of its ice. It's now ice on 2 weeks later and ice off 2 weeks sooner. So the lake ice is disappearing. Now, that doesn't probably make an awful lot of difference to a lot of people, but other people, like people who enjoy ice fishing and other sports that are associated, might be very unhappy to learn that the lake ice is disappearing. I understand also that the trout in the streams in Wisconsin and the other northern states are having a difficult time because the water is warming up. You know, fly fishermen like to like to spend money, and people make a living, helping those folks. And the economy—that's another economic factor, which doesn't seem very large, but it's a large thing to a few people, and they're going to feel that.
Yeah, they definitely are. We have Paul in West Bend next. Paul, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. You know, until Congress mandates a a program within the curriculum of science, namely physics, some chemistry, and biology. We're just creating a generation of scientific Luddites. And hey, there's many Luddites in Congress if you follow some of their actions they're taking in some of their committees and subcommittee actions. And so that's the long and short of the story. Here's the question I have is, you know, you got about China's pushing, what, 1.4 billion people, about 25% of it. It's maybe at first world standards as far as BTU consumption for their life, you know, their lifestyle. So tell me, I read, I think, on a CIA site that they're building about a power plant a week using different types of coal. So there's no way that China, India, and us can find an alternative source that is not cranking out methane and carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And these people want all the goodies that we have. So there's, just to be pragmatic, I don't think there's any way that from a, you know, when you start quantifying the tons of coal that we're burning, there's absolutely no way that we can come up with an alternative unless you want to keep, you know, a large part of the planet in poverty, so they don't have all the energy burning.
Yeah, I know where you're going, but Sam,
I understand the sentiment, Paul, that you're sharing with us, and also the facts that you're sharing with us. It's all a matter of attitude, basically, as far as I'm concerned. The attitudes that we have individually, and the attitudes of our elected representatives, and the manifestations of these attitudes. That's why we have to learn more about what is happening to us and what we are doing to the environment. Paul, Larry, and others in the listening audience know that I'm not a gloom and doom person. I'm a very optimistic person. We have to develop a sense of deep appreciation of what it is that we are doing in our society to contribute to the global warming that we're talking about here, and also develop a deep sense of responsibility to adapt and to mitigate. And those are two dimensions that we can do something about. Jerry chaired the American Chemical Society Climate Science Initiative group, and he and the group came up with a list of activities for us to consider individually. Perhaps, Jerry, you'd like to share some of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a list which is not unique to us, but it includes the kinds of things that Bassam was talking about earlier, using more efficient appliances in your home, using the more efficient light bulbs that are now available. In fact, they're the only ones that are now available.
Mm-hmm.
Driving a low-emission car. Interestingly, eating less meat. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of water to create a cow, so that the use of meat as a source of protein is a factor that we could do something about. We have ability to speak out to our representatives, as I think Paul was saying, that they don't sometimes listen, but we still have the responsibility to do that. And we have responsibility to make sure that we work with our friends in a cooperative way to see that the kinds of things that we'd like to, the way we'd like to have the Earth retained, we work toward.
Yeah. Yeah, but Sam, you're going to add something.
Yeah, we should continue this conversation with respect for the other person that we're engaged in talking to. We should be, as Paul said, talking to our elected representatives and making sure that they understand the positions that we have, the consequences economically to changes that we're looking at. It's all. Can lead to positive things that happen in society. So having a conversation with Senator Ron Johnson, for example, and his staff, or Senator Tammy Baldwin and her staff, about matters that affect us not only here in Wisconsin, because these changes know no state boundaries. These changes do not have any geographic boundaries. But having these kinds of conversations, and especially conversations within our communities, so we become more aware of what it is that's actually happening. And this is how we can influence the political process. This is how we can become aware of the economic consequences to the changes that we're talking about. I think it can be a win-win situation. It does not have to be a confrontational situation. It is not pitting one segment of society against another. It is working together in a respectful, mutually respectful fashion to consider action that can be taken by individuals and by us collectively.
We have, you know, in the way of along the lines of literacy and science literacy, I think one of the wonderful ways that you guys work to increase science literacy is to make learning a lot more fun and more interesting. And there are some great events coming up that we should all know about. Sam, maybe the first is the Science Expeditions event. It's going on this coming weekend.
Right here in Madison, Science Expeditions. This is an annual event that takes place. It is full of activities.
It is so much fun.
For families, for adults, for youngsters. Oh, everyone is invited in the Madison area and anywhere else they want to drive from to come to this weekend. Engineering Expo will be coming up later this month. A bit later, on the 4th of July, we're going to do our annual program of the Science of Fireworks. Science is all around us, and Madison especially is fortunate to have so many good avenues for such offerings, Larry. And I want to take a moment just to once again salute you for what you do in terms of advancing science literacy. You have so many guests that speak about issues related to science. Scott Craven, you have the weather guys, you talk about nutritional matters, all kinds. So thank you. Thank you very much, Larry, for what you do in this regard.
Well, I appreciate that, Bassam, and I obviously want to turn the pages back and turn the tables and thank you as well. You didn't mention your Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Land of Shaka Shuri, but that's coming up obviously in December. It's a long ways off, but it's your 45th.
Number 45. The 45th annual Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Shuri. It's going to be a big celebration marking this anniversary, and we will be putting more information about it on our website. We, of course, invite everyone in the listening audience to visit our website, www.scifun.org, scifun.org, and we're very happy to have you visit us and even ask questions and read a summary of what we talked about today, along with links to suggested activities that individuals can take with respect to the mitigation and adaptation of climate change.
That's actually a wonderful site. And also, just as an aside, there are a lot of really cool experiments that you can do right at home with your children or just for your own self that are really a lot of fun.
Share the joy of doing fun experiments. And we talk about fun here in the best sense of the word. We're not talking about cheap thrills, Larry.
No.
We're talking about being intellectually stimulated and being emotionally rewarded and being engaged. It's really the joy of learning. It's the joy of inquiry. It's learning how to deal with frustrations when you come across something that you don't understand right away. It's learning how to be patient. It's learning by doing. And that's what we promote for advancing science literacy in the classroom and outside the classroom.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. And I hope that we'll be able to do this again, I'm sure. And I hope people take a part in the Science Expedition event coming up this weekend on the UW-Madison campus. Bassam Shaka Shuri, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison. Jerry Bell, former director of the National Science Foundation, faculty associate at the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. great to have them along.